I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Rae Marie Taylor. She's author of the book The Land, Our Gift, and Wild Hope. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
And joining us also are Jack Leffler, who's an author, an oral historian, and radio producer, and has been on this show many times. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
And Kais Bello, who is editor of the book Return to the River. We talked to you about that a while ago. Glad to have you back.
Great to be back.
And so the three of you will be speaking tonight at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore, and the talk is called Our Collective Imagination Matters. Three authors share on restoring hope with the land itself. So what's the imagination piece of it? I mean, when we think about all the ways in which the land is devastated, I think a lot of people's minds first go to the kind of political land use mm-hmm. dimension and all of that. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the imagination.
Well, my hope lies in the people and the resilience of the people. And basically, it is we who create the culture that we have or not in relation to the land. And so I feel that the collective, I like that collective imagination, and I know Jack shares very much that sense as well. And I wanted my book to be part of a collective imagination, so that's why I invited Jack and Kais. And I do believe in one voice can resonate within the culture and can matter to many people, but when people come together and express, the resonance, I think, really has a chance to influence the culture. So that's really where my hope resides as a writer and an artist, is to be able to contribute to that dimension.
Talk more about what you do imagine for the land and for land restoration.
Well, you know, it would be wonderful to put a really beautiful picture where everything is totally healed and harmonious and there's no more fracking and that kind of thing, but that's not very realistic. So my hope is that this movement, like with the Kavira Coalition, the Malpai Borderlands Group, Jack's Lore of the Land, which is really the best for culture and habitat, and the Center for the American West in Colorado, this large movement, my hope would be that these people who are all working together to keep people on the land, to keep the relationship with the land alive and the deep-seated earth values alive, that could somehow grow and have more and more force in our culture, so that there could be less fracking and there could be less loss of land. I mean, land is very fragmented now, but we do know that one thing that comes to mind is something someone was telling me the other day about these wonderful programs for children. I know of some in Taos, I know of some in California, where the children are really very much taken out on the land, are learning very closely about the ecology in a playful way, but also in a very well-informed way. So there's that part of the education for children. And I think the farm to table has many different levels as well, that for youth, I mean, and for older people too, like us, that can be cohesive for the culture. So I do see, in my most hopeful vision, I see more water soon. And
you see more water?
More water.
What do you mean?
Because we're dependent on water. And for things to flourish, we will be needing more water. And so we need that from nature for the drought to end. But the drought is perhaps, whether or not it's
not
totally
going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. But in the meantime, I had an experience at Comanche Creek when I was helping restore that creek. And as soon as we planted the willows and set up the veins to recreate meanders in the creek, it was amazing how quickly the flow of the water was healthy again and how the silt was eliminated. And so it's a minute thing. It's in a very small, site-specific place. But things do have to be site-specific in terms of healing the land. And Kais can say a lot more about the Santa Fe River and the impact on the restoration there. And so I do really believe that if there are enough people working in relationship with the land for the water, that there can be gradually a new balance that can be created.
Talk more about your, Kais Bello, your perspective on restoration.
I echo what Ray was saying about being site-specific. My experience with putting together this book and working on behalf of the Santa Fe River has been profoundly site-specific. It's been something a few steps away from my home that I'm directly interacting with, and, you know, a body of water that's actually running through all of our bodies. It's like you can't get any more relevant to our lives. And that is the starting place for so much of the healing the world needs. The problems we face are profound at this moment. And beginning with what we can actually put our hands on, the stories we can actually tell about a place, our imagination for the healing of that, our faith and our hope is what can bring succor to the hurting, you know, the dry riverbeds, the land that is being fracked, any of the things that we decide to dedicate ourselves to, because it's what is sustaining us as individuals. It's feeding our souls and giving us our meaning and purpose for our individual lives.
Jack Loeffler, you have worked with so many different people in the Southwest and written so many and collected so many oral histories. And, of course, part of the whole question of imagination is what stories we tell and are told about the land. Tell us some of the stories that have really influenced you in thinking about the Southwest.
Well, I'll go back to one of the earliest moments in my time. Back in 1964, I worked with a remaining dear old friend who's still with us named Stuart Brand, who he and I put together a project called America Needs Indians. And the whole idea was, why does America need Indians? And so I lived in a forked stick hogan up at Navajo Mountain for maybe 7 months, and I was adopted by a family of Navajos. And one of the things that really began to dawn on me in those days, I was herding sheep and guarding the cornfield and stuff like that, and having one of two pickup trucks in the entire region, I got to haul a lot of people around, and nobody spoke any English, and I spoke no Navajo. But it really began to grow on me how much habitat shapes cultural evolution. You could actually see it right there. And subsequently, I'm still working on America Needs Indians in a large way. And so over the years, many years, almost 50 years now, it's been a constant trek through imagination to imagine how our human perspective can grow to the extent that we can accommodate lots and lots of different points of view. Right now in our culture, we're so dominated by an economic imperative that many of us are blinded to the bigger picture. Witness what's happening in Washington as we speak. In his inaugural address, President Obama talked about really focusing on global warming and what I think of as climate instability, and yet we have this big tar sands event coming up right before everybody's thinking right now. And so the question is how much will the corporate will sway our political hierarchy in behalf of creating more money, basically hewn out of habitat, and how much can we shift out of that mode and into a much broader perspective that includes many different things that we have to look at in order to be able to conceive of things. And so my big hope is that, say, looking right here in the watershed, the greater watershed of the northern Rio Grande, which includes the Rio Santa Fe and lots of other tributarial regions, recently there have been a move afoot to try to create the northern Rio Grande region, actually Santa Fe, Taos, and Rio Riba counties, as a national heritage area. And it seemed to me that they blew it by leaving out Los Alamos, because there's an entire intellectual heritage that exists there. And so one of the things that I'm working on right now is trying to look at the greater Northern Rio Grande watershed as a place where just about all of the perspectives that are available in America can be seen within this small area, and trying to forward the notion of some sort of sense of cohesion so that people can recognize each other's perspectives and use that interblend of perspective to focus on the bottom line, which is, if habitat fails, we're out of here.
Right. We are very out of here. And what you're talking about is kind of like the human equivalent of biodiversity.
Exactly. Cultural diversity and biodiversity are interlinked just incredibly so, just as another huge interlink is climate instability and cultural instability. These are factors that really have to be looked at big time right now. And subsequently, I feel that it's really important for events like we're going to be doing tonight, where we can have conversations with people who can use actively their imaginations in behalf of habitat, and seeing us as simply one of the small components of our larger habitat.
Yeah, I think it's certainly where we came from, is seeing ourselves, I mean, we hunter-gatherers in most of our human evolution, really, as part of a much larger landscape and in communication with the other elements of that landscape, sometimes a very dangerous landscape with full of predators and things like that. And we are so separated from that conversation isn't going on so much anymore. We're just talking to each other, even here over this table, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the spark that gave way for my book. Was one morning I was in Cerro Gordo Park and for sunrise, and there were these incredible ravens that seemed to be born of the sun that morning. And as they came out of that sun, I thought, you know, I'm one of the privileged people who was able to grow up a lot in wilderness. And by then I knew what was happening. And I thought, I have to witness those values, at least, to allow them to be active with other voices to come together.
Profoundly endangered, not of losing the habitat and everything. That is imminent and going to happen in our lifetimes. But right now we're facing another crisis of our relationship being endangered, our relationship with the wild, mm-hmm. an authentic, real thing in which it actually feeds us. It feeds our art, it feeds our stories, it feeds our collective imagination. Without that, there's really nothing.
The meaning is gone.
We're talking to Ray Marie Taylor and Kais Bello and Jack Leffler. So what are some of the, I mean, we talk about collective imagination and how it matters, and I wondered for each of you, well, you've talked about this to some extent, but for you, Ray Marie, what are some of the moments that really changed and affected the way you see the land and that brought you forward to writing this book, The Land, Our Gift and Wild Hope, and so on?
Well, I guess there are different things. First of all, my childhood in a wilderness homesteading cabin with my family in the summers was essential to everything. Everything I ever learned about the land, about living with the land, came from there. And as I was writing the book, I came to trying to come home again in the 90s and was here in Santa Fe, and I had this terrible shock of what was going on, and that totally galvanized me.
The shock of what was going on, what do you mean?
The loss, a lot of loss of land, and the sense of loss of cultural traditions because of that loss of land in New Mexico and in southern Colorado. And I hadn't realized that was happening, so when I came home, it was like, wow. So I was very galvanized, but had to survive and didn't get a chance to get back to the writing of the book for many years. But once I did, I was getting pretty depressed, and I spoke to a good friend in Taos, Ernie Atencio, who at the time was head of the Taos Land Trust, and I said, to finish the book, I need hope. And he pointed me to the Bioneers, to the Kavira Coalition. And it was when I attended the Kavira Coalition for the first time, their conference for the first time, I felt the force of the collective that was still alive. And what was new to that collective of Westerners was there was so much collaboration going on. And that Courtney White and others who founded the coalition managed to create a culture of trust among traditional enemies. Ecologists, conservationists, ranchers, federal agents working together all of a sudden. Even federal agents, you know, I couldn't believe it.
Federal agents?
Yeah, federal agents that deal with the land and the...
Like BLM?
Yes, BLM people, yeah. And here was a new culture, a new West, as they say, a new culture where these different factions were actually working together and there was a circle of trust being built. In that hope and in that belief and in that actual action for repairing the land and maintaining its health and keeping people in relationship with the land.
It's such a kind of interesting irony, I think, especially when we look at the ranching piece, that ranchers are doing this activity, which is really destructive and uses huge amounts of water and overgrazes the land, which is one of the great problems we have in New Mexico. And they love the land and are a lot closer to it than a lot of city dwellers who might talk about it.
Well, and that's what people like the Kavira and the Malpai Borderlands group, working with ecologists and supporting ranchers who were asking for help and getting ecologists to work with, there's a lot of new understanding of how to deal with the grazing so that there's not overgrazing. And there have been ranches restored, even in southern New Mexico. I've spoken to the ranchers who were just about to kill their cattle. And they finally asked for help through the Kavira and got some ecologists working with them and were able to restore pastures. Tutta Libby Cruz, who I interviewed in the book as well, inherited her family's ranch that was in total disrepair in terms of the land, and she and her husband were able to, working with many people, able to restore the Ute Creek and restored 13 pastures that had been dead and that kind of thing. So
I'd like to mention that, apropos of Tutta and Jack Cruz, that a person who helped them enormously was a man named Bill Zeedyke, who did a book entitled Let the Water Do the Work. He collaborated on that book, and he's a really profound thinker, and he's also a real activist when it comes to putting back together things like ecosystems and Ute Creek. But one of the things I wanted to mention, apropos what you were just saying about ranchers, one of the best examples of a rancher restoring habitat that I know of is in the case of Sid Goodlow, who has a ranch down near Carrizozo, New Mexico, and who he bought the ranch back. It's a funny way of putting it. He purchased this piece of land back in 1956, which was a cowburnt hunk of land, and little by little he was able to restore it. In the 1960s he was over in Africa and he met Alan Savory, who has been instrumental in creating a whole new perspective regarding rotation of cattle and things like that, and people like Drummond Hadley and Bill McDonald and Warner Glenn down in the Boot Heel of New Mexico have taken a huge cue from Alan Savory. But the upshot is, and this really interests me enormously, Sid Goodlow at one point was riding his horse through this piece of land that he purchased, and he found a petroglyph that had beaver and fish carved into it. And he snapped to the fact that that dry arroyo over there had been running water. There is evidence that there was a pretty sizable gathering of different tribal peoples, you know, going back in time. Right there on the ranch. And so looking at that, he started thinking seriously about how to get that arroyo running again, which he did, working with the National Forest Service and other people in the area. Fire is a huge factor in all of this. We have had a history of over a century now of putting out fires as soon as they start up, and that was not right from the point of view of the flow of nature. And subsequently, re-establishing fire as a factor and putting other things together, including talking to Alan Savory about keeping a limited number of cattle in a state of rotation within the context of the ranch, Sid was able to beautifully restore that ranch. There's an interview I did with Sid in my book here, this current book called Thinking Like a Watershed, where he talks about his history on that land. And it was, to me, one of the great inspirations because, as Ray pointed out, there's been an enormous disparity between many ranchers and many environmentalists that extend back to the days of Edward Abbey, who really came down on ranchers and cowboys big time, even though he used to be one, and even though many of his really dearest of friends were ranchers and cowboys. He gave this incredible lecture up in either Wyoming or Montana, forgotten which now, back in the 1980s. Get your elk out of, or get your cows out of my elk pasture. And that really kicked forth this whole environmental concern over this. And to me, one of the biggest issues has been to, as Ray points out, to restore a relationship between ranchers and environmentalists, because if anybody belongs in the same camp, it's those two groups.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned this petroglyph. Do you think there was that connection between the beaver and the fish was like when you have the beaver, the water runs better? Like that.
Well,
was
you have water. You have running water.
Yeah.
And he had this dry arroyo. I've seen photographs of it. Sid showed me these pictures of this arroyo before and after. And by virtue of working with the Forest Service to clear some of the debris out of the forest, which is marks the northern boundary of his ranch, and really restoring fire within the ecosystem and rotating the cattle so that it doesn't get totally cowburnt, gradually the arroyo started running again, and the beaver are back. And I don't know about the fish. He would never show anybody where that petroglyph is because he was afraid then that all sorts of people would be wanting to come and see this petroglyph.
Right.
And he wanted to keep it hidden.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, and this is a question I guess for all of you, is the role of arts in land restoration?
Well, art is a voice, and whatever form it takes, writing or visual art. Here in Santa Fe, we often have activities bringing writers and visual art people together. We've had, with the return of the river, a few events that have really mattered in terms of witnessing the river and encouraging the culture and the people to support the return of the river. So I guess that's sort of a simple answer, but art is a voice, and it's all part of this power of the collective imagination that we spoke of.
I agree. I think that aside from the political and economic challenges facing all of our crises, our water here, the other issues elsewhere in the world, the greatest challenge is actually the failure of imagination that is allowing all of this to happen. And the task of collectively bringing, say, our river back to life in our community, in our hearts and minds, is the biggest one. And it's one that I think the written word and the arts is uniquely suited to. It's actually possibly the only way we can do that. Gary Paul Nabhan has a quote that really guided my work in The Return of the River, which is that to restore any place, we must also begin to restory it. By replenishing the land with our stories, we let the wild voices around us guide the restoration work we do. And I think that speaks to the larger task of the ecologists and the politicians and the people who are working on the restoration's actual, you know, undertaking. Like what's happened in the Santa Fe River in the last few years has been, you know, it's been astonishing to watch how it's been transformed with many, many people participating in that, artists along with the scientists and the hardworking guys who planted thousands of trees.
But and to have all those people talking to each other, I think, is really where the work is these days.
But really the work is having the land talking to all of those people and having each of them guided by a sense of connection and purpose that comes from something bigger than our heads.
Ray Marie Taylor is author of the book The Land, Our Gift and Wild Hope. Kais Bello is editor of the book Return of the River. Jack Leffler is an author of so many books that if I read them all right now aloud, we'd never leave this table. But he's an author, an oral historian, an environmentalist, and radio producer. And all three of them will be at Collected Works Bookstore tonight at 6 o'clock here in Santa Fe on Galisteo Street. an event titled Our Collective Imagination Matters, Three Authors Share on Restoring Hope with the Land Itself. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Great to be here.
It's been wonderful.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.